Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. We are a same-sex female couple. Our two-year-old has recently begun showing a strong preference for me, bio mum, particularly at bedtime, but it has recently crept into the other parts of life. Lifting her when she goes for a walk, sitting beside her, playing with her, etc., has a massive tantrum. If I'm in the house but my partner wants to do something like put her to bed, etc., my partner is a fabulous mother, much more patient than I am with our daughter, and is just so kind and loving towards her. I know it's a normal stage of child development, but it is really upsetting for both my partner and I. Any tips on how to navigate what for us has probably been the most difficult part of parenting so far.
Yeah.
And sorry, I'm only laughing because so far is the key phrase
it
there.
It is the key phrase, because yeah. I was just going to say, and so it begins.
Yes.
Because you're like this, you're spot on. This is a typical phase of toddler development. We get a question like this
quite a lot. Yeah.
You know, and it has nothing to do with which of you is the quote unquote better parent.
Yeah.
And it has little to do with I actually prefer you. That's not really what it's about either, because preferences will change. We often see it come out in kids this age when it's maybe the parent they spend more time with, you know, the one who's maybe home earlier, does the pickups or whatever it is, or the one they deem, I currently am really into blocks and you're better at blocks, therefore you're my favorite right now. Like, it really is that egocentric. And it, just like any phase, it will pass. And the preference thing will swap. You're in this week, you could be out next month, it could be, you know, and over and back. But also when you're 2 years old, so little in your life is in your control.
Yeah.
And this is a place that you can play out some control. Mm. And you can decide, no, I won't go to bed for you for no other reason than I've decided in this moment, now is the moment to take control. Mm. So I think, you know, and what I see in this letter is really where I want to go with it is, you know, this is a normal phase of child development, but it's the impact it has. Because even when you logically know, yeah, I get it, it still hurts.
Yeah,
even when you know logically it's not personal, it feels so personal. Mm. So it's really that, I think.
Now, maybe it's because the preference that the child is shown at the moment is for the bio mom,
yeah,
and then the other moms think, is that what this is?
It isn't at all what this is. It truly isn't. And I think, you know, as for the parent writing in, there's a couple of practical things you can do. Like, put your partner in charge of some of the really fun tasks that your toddler enjoys. You know, it could be blocks, it could be art, it could be baking, it could be dancing or singing, whatever is the current thing they love. Mm. You know, make sure your partner is the one leading that activity. You could also pop out for a short while, like pop to the shop, go for a little walk, whatever it might be, and just give them space together when you're not in the house. But you could also be busy on occasion when you are in demand. I'm thinking of the bedtime. You could be on the phone.
Yeah,
that could be the time you go for the walk, which will actually redirect your child to your partner. And you could do that. Oh, I'm on the phone right now. Go to your mom, whatever it might be. You could do practical things like that just to support this and reinforce each other. But even if your toddler resists, you are sending that message of, we can both do these things. We can both meet your needs. There are also a couple of things, though, your partner could do that work alongside this. You know, even when you're the parent who's being pushed out, you can celebrate, you can cheer on the fun. Even when you're being excluded, you can say, wow, that looks great. Look at you guys doing that together.
Yeah.
You can definitely involve yourself. You could plan a fun outing for just you and your child, you know, and leave parent in favour, let's call it at the moment, out of it. And a fun outing, I really do mean going to the park with a few little picnic bits and making a bit of a day of it. It doesn't have to be anything fancy.
Mm.
We are talking about a two-year-old, you know, small things mean everything. So keep it small. And you could also just really focus on, even when you're being pushed to the side, just be there singing her favourite song, joking, playing, just showing how playful and available you are, but also showing, I'm not taking this personally, even if you have to dig deep for that fake it till you make it kind of situation.
Yeah.
But it is about taking, well, what can we do? This is a phase and it will move on.
Yeah. And to say to that parent that we have had this question
many times before.
Yeah. Yeah, many times before. My 12-year-old son will be starting secondary school in September. He has slipped down to below average this year at school. Overall, he's very unmotivated when it comes to schoolwork. He has dyslexia, which thankfully was spotted very early on. Luckily, he responded well to learning plans put in place to support him to attain a good reading level and basic spelling ability. However, as a result of this, it has meant that from an early age, he did have to work that bit harder than most just to maintain a low average. As the schoolwork jumped a level each year, he would continue working hard. This year, whatever the task, he was always looking for a shortcut, doing it last minute, and overall showed a lack of interest. Our reward system at home, pocket money in New Jersey, etc., doesn't seem to work anymore. I don't want to be continuously nagging him to read and needing to stand over him to ensure homework is done, particularly as we head into secondary school, and it's about kids growing up a little and taking some responsibility. I haven't had this experience with his other siblings. I'm not sure how I can best support him during this transition. I'm not looking for high marks. I'm trying to ensure he doesn't end up falling so far behind. He's overwhelmed.
Oh, overwhelmed is the key word, isn't it? There's so much here. And just when you were reading that, the language that really jumped out at me was that he's fallen down to below average. He was previously low average. That's language that's taken from the how results of those standardized tests that kids do
yes,
in school.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm actually thinking, and to the best of my knowledge, those results have just come out in recent weeks, that this might be where you're getting that. So initially I thought, okay, not all kids do well in standardized tests.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, over panic about that. Talk to your school. But actually, this seems to have been a bit of a theme far beyond that across the school year. One of the things that jumps out here is about, you know, this is a kid who has to work harder to maintain a low average.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really hard, Sean, to keep working super hard to get the bare minimum back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't blame this kid for going, oh, I'm fed up.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I was just thinking the same thing.
You know,
yeah.
Like he's, you know, he has worked hard. And when you then link that to this parent's reward systems, and a reward system, I'm not judging that. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's clearly worked for you until it hasn't, which often is the case with reward systems when it's stuff. But the extrinsic rewards are going, okay, if I study, I'm going to get this thing. But he's not getting the intrinsic feedback. He's not getting, I studied really hard. I got the New Jersey and I did well and I feel good about doing well.
Yeah.
He's not, I worked super hard and I did all right.
Yeah.
And I maybe didn't even do all right.
Yeah.
So it's actually very hard to stay motivated with that. So I absolutely agree. You don't want to be continuously nagging him to read and it's not going to work. Like, I think reading is such a great thing to give kids. It's a real gift, but you don't want it to become a chore.
Yeah.
You want it to be something that can
yeah.
be enjoyed, not endured. And you know what came to my mind on that was, I have a couple of books myself in my office and I really think they're great and I've recommended them to many people who've also found them really good, by Serena Malloy, and who's an Irish writer, who the Tree That Sang to Me, and a second one called Wider Than the Sea. And they are written in dyslexia-friendly prose and language.
Mm.
So they're
okay.
They're not, you know, this is a book for kids with dyslexia. It's not like that, but they are written in a way that kids with dyslexia can access them much easier.
Yeah.
So it's just the layout of the prose and the structure of sentences in it and the flow of the narrative.
Oh, that's interesting.
And actually, they're lovely stories as well. And they really would speak to his age group. So I think that's well worth looking at. And the other thing is, and it's often recommended, and I know this parent is raising a child with dyslexia and probably knows this, but just in case it's useful for anyone else, to rather than read, you've got to read, go on and read, is to engage in paired reading. So you read a bit, they read a bit, you read a bit, they read a bit, and you do it in that parallel. And that's actually a very effective way of promoting reading for kids who do find it quite difficult. But also chat with him. Use conversation. So when you've read a bit, and sometimes if children have to work really hard at reading, they're not taking in so much of the story and the
yes,
narrative because they're just
the
trying to
right.
get the words right, you
yeah.
know. So actually, if you've read a few pages, to close it and go, oh, do you know, I really like this bit. And what did you think of that bit? And talk it through and don't rule out, you know, nurturing a love of stories through audiobooks as well. And just looking at other ways that you could do that. I think, you know, switch, and you might be doing it already again, but the reward system you're doing, switch it to the reward being for his effort over the outcome, because I'm hearing this as a kid.
Yeah.
Yes, it has changed this year, but up until that, he's working hard, really hard. He's putting in huge effort and he should be rewarded for the effort, regardless of outcome, which is a little beyond his control. I do think in general, talk to him now when things are calm and he's not stressed and you're not stressed because you are stressed. I can hear it in this letter. But talk to him in a calm, open way and ask him what he wants and what he needs from you to support his learning as he moves into secondary school. Almost like a reflection. Okay, look. Mm. We're done with primary school now. Secondary school is a bit different. There's going to be multiple transitions, different subjects. How can I best help you? What do you want me to do? What do you not want me to do? And what one idea could you put in and offer him going, hey, this could also help? Think about ways of learning by doing. Outings, trips to museums, you know, experiential learning and talking things through. As I said, keep doing that. And dyslexiaireland.ie is a really useful resource for any. There's a parent section with information, whether you're parenting or supporting the learning of a child in primary school or secondary school. There are kind of downloadable things that you can look at there with tips and guidance. And I think they also do some seminars or webinars on, you know, that for parents around supporting children. So that could be useful. But make sure you talk to his secondary school ahead of time.
Yes.
And link as quickly as you can in the new year with whoever his year head is. Once you have that person's details, do go in and meet in a positive, proactive way rather than waiting for them to be telling you he's not doing this and he's not doing that.
Hopefully they have some supports in that regard.
Well, they absolutely will, but they need to know.
Yes. Yeah. 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 How can myself and my husband teach our 8-year-old our 8-year-old only child how to understand that when someone else is getting attention, it's not a bad thing for her? She's a very self-aware child, articulate, worries about what others think and getting into trouble. But then on the other hand, is quite sure of herself in some decisions. If her cousins aren't outwardly excited to see her when she goes to their house, she thinks they don't want to play. She feels very strongly, takes on the feeling, and if it's a sad, scared feeling, gets annoyed that someone has made her feel that way. We feel she is an empathetic child. She's very kind and generous to smaller children, animals and adults. But when it comes to her cousins and peers in school, she appears to resent being kind, and there's always this level of jealousy. To give context, she was a long, long awaited baby for us. When she arrived, everywhere she went, families, friends, neighbours were super excited to see her. Continued until she was a toddler. Does she really remember that? Any advice you can give us about teaching her to address those feelings and identify them in herself and try to be happy for others?
Oh, it's a big ask of an 8-year-old. So that's my first thing, you know, just, you know, maybe manage the expectations there. I'm going to share a podcast on parenting a sensitive child after when we come off air, because it might be just useful. Because when you're saying she's empathetic, she's also sounding sensitive, like she's feeling the world deeply.
Yes.
And when you're a child, like that's great when you're an adult. But when you're a child, that means even everyday microaggressions, you know, that things that kids do,
yes,
you know, being a kid, that can really wound a sensitive child. They feel those slights very deeply. And I think one of the ways you could approach this with her is she's seeking a lot of reassurance. Like, you know, when she goes in and she's seeing the cousins and they're immersed in play, but she's personalizing it. Well, they haven't been super excited to see me, therefore they don't want me here at all. Practice with her going, okay, so the story you're telling yourself is they don't want to play with me. And when I saw that situation, the story I told myself was, oh, look, your cousins are really involved in their play. I bet you'll find it interesting too.
Mm.
So you're offering an alternative perspective, but you're not telling her she's wrong to think and feel the way that she is, because we don't want her distrusting herself. But if you kind of say, oh, well, it could be what you think, but it could also be what I'm saying, so that you're gently yet firmly challenging this, okay? Because she is. What she's struggling with is holding other perspectives than her own in mind. I also think, you know, when you say here, could she really remember how special she was treated? I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Especially if there was like a parade every time she went somewhere, you know, when people were that excited. And it might not be that consciously she says, oh, you all were used to be delighted to see me and now not so much. I'm perfectly ordinary now in the family. It's more that she'll have held on to it at a body level.
Yeah.
She'll have known the excitement and the thrill. And she knows that that has changed. I don't know what changed when she was a toddler, but I'm sure people do still delight in her and, you know, are delighted to see her. But have a think on that. You really want want to start working on emotional fluency, giving her some language to better express what's going on. Disappointment. Mm. I feel hurt. I was confused. I didn't understand. You know, that's complex when you're eight.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's complex for some people who are, you know, 28 80.
Or 38,
you know?
Yeah.
So it really help her develop those ways of expressing by going, okay, the story I told myself is one way, but also saying, okay, when you came in and you saw that, talk to me about the feeling. What color was it? What shape was it? Where does it live in your body? Is it heavy? Is it light? Helping her to better understand what happened in that moment. And I would, just because of this, you know, she is seeking so much reassurance and validation, look for opportunities for independence, give her chores, take care of a pet. You said she likes animals. If you don't have a pet, that's not my way of telling you to go out and get one. Don't worry. But if there is one, but just looking at ways that she can, if in lieu of a pet, you know, it's not quite the same, but you're going to get the same effect for what I'm going to say. You could plant something that she is solely responsible for taking care of. A plant is a little lower, not in my house now. Don't give me a plant ever. It won't last. But, for, you know, is it something she could be watering and feeding and taking care of?
Yeah. I don't know if we've had exactly this question before, but it sounds very familiar. My daughter keeps asking where everyone is going when someone leaves the room or if she sees them walking away. She's two and seems like a very happy little girl, but I've noticed this habit and it's causing a little concern. Last weekend, we were having a family barbecue and my husband walked down to the back of the garden to put something in the bin, only for my daughter to ask me again, "Where's Daddy going?" I've done some Googling and I'm now starting to worry my daughter has some sort of trauma or somewhere left her before and never came back. I was wondering if this could be connected to me going back to work after maternity leave. Maybe I'm overthinking. Maybe she's just inquisitive. I'm getting worried that she asks if anyone leaves the room. Let me know what you think. I'd like a three-year-old in the house a couple of weeks ago, and there's a couple of rooms that are covered in pictures. And the three-year-old spent a good 40 minutes between the two rooms. Who's that? Who's that?
100%.
Yeah. And she, is that the same thing?
Absolutely. She is well and truly in the question asking phase of development, you know, but she's also got a gradually increasing, expanding vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So where's so-and-so going? And he's going to the shop and he's going to the garden. They're all different answers and different words. And it's all fabulous. Now, don't Google. Don't put anything like this on Google. Mm. That is like absolutely going to feed your anxiety. So know when any of us, and I do it myself, so I'm putting my own hand up, when I'm going on Google, I am looking to reinforce the worry I have.
Yes,
I am seeking out.
Yeah.
I am right to feel the way that I do.
You do.
So be very aware of that. And when you say, you know, does she have trauma from someone going and not coming back? I was going, I don't know, does she? Like, did somebody go and never come back? Because if that's not her experience, then no. She doesn't.
Yes.
Absolutely doesn't. And you going back to work on mat leave can be challenging for kids, but it's not trauma. Okay, it's really not. So it's, but when you said it, it made me think, oh, so she is experiencing every day separation and reunification.
Sure. Yeah.
Because you go to work and then you come home. So she is, where are you going? Going to work. This mystical, magical place called work, because that doesn't mean anything to our little kids. They just know it means you go and I go somewhere else and eventually you'll come back for me.
Yeah.
That's all that workplace means. So she, in asking that every day, her people permanence is still refining. You know, she has it, but she knows when you go, you'll come back. But she still wants to check it. And she's using all her lovely new words to do so. I think this is really normal. I would answer her. I know it might be exhausting, but I would answer her every time. Hey, I'm going to the bathroom. Where did he go? He went to the bathroom. Ah, look at that. You know, cause and effect thinking. Play peekaboo. Play hide and seek. Do little treasure hunts with her own things. Just hide them and find them and celebrate that. Play Marco Polo voice games, you know, calling out. She might want to do it with using mommy, daddy and you using her name, but just calling out to each other that she can hear your voice when not seeing you. I would play with this because I think it's what she's trying to do.
Yeah.
And I absolutely would not worry about it and do not Google it.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus also maybe there's, and you know, mothers have a tendency to go back to
guilt. It's guilt.
It's all my fault.
Yeah, I did this to her. It's my, absolutely not. But it's so understandable. Working parent out there went back to work without feeling that pang going, oh, is this the right? It is. I know it's the right thing, but am I doing the right thing?
Just
be very kind to yourself. She sounds delightful and she's chatting away to you at 2 years old. That's great.
Yeah. We've had a few texts. Could you repeat the names of the books you spoke about earlier that are written suitably for people with dyslexia?
Yeah, so they're published by Hachette and they're written by Serena Malloy. And one is called The Tree That Sang to Me and the other one is called Wider Than the Sea.
Fantastic stuff. Serena Malloy. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thanks so much.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.